Welcome to Ryersonian This Week. We have all the news you need to know and stories you'll want to hear, both on campus and in Toronto.
It's Friday, March 1st. I'm Anthony Manrique.
And I'm Zara Hamoud. This week, we wrapped up not only February, but also Black History Month.
We have the preview of Locating My History, a Ryersonian audio documentary about how Black Canadians are underrepresented in the story of Canada.
Then, Anthony reports on an up-and-coming Ryerson program that aims to finance and build bridges for Black entrepreneurs in Canada.
And Zara sat down to chat with Mike Regis, a recent Ryerson grad and aspiring filmmaker, about his soon-to-launch film production company and more.
So I'm really excited because this is my first week on the podcast and I'm here with Anthony Manrique, who I've known for the past 4 years at Ryerson, and now we're hosting the podcast together.
How do you feel about it?
I feel good. I feel really excited. It's fun to be behind the mic. I just finished my internship and it was a more behind the scenes job, which was fun, but I like being on the mic.
How was the process of trying to piece together the stories and, recording them and making together the segments?
Well, I think we have a really good team at the Ryersonian, Camille, yourself, everyone that was involved. And so I think that my work was, I felt almost halfway done for me. So it was really great. But listening to kind of how it all comes together and seeing the sort of format that we've taken on and how, what it looks like in the end based on, you know, the previous episodes that I've been listening to with you and Melissa Bernardo. It was an interesting process.
I see. So you've listened to our other podcasts before?
Yes, yes, I have.
What do you think about them?
I think you guys are great. Had a very good rapport, and I can only hope that we will have the same rapport.
Well, and you did say that you're a huge podcast junkie, right?
Mm-hmm,
and,
yes.
What type of podcasts do you usually listen to?
Oh, my goodness. I think nowadays I really like to listen to a lot of news and political related podcasts just because I find, for me, it's the best way to learn what's going on in the world. And it's in a format that doesn't feel as overwhelming because news can often be overwhelming, especially nowadays when we're just in a sea of information.
Well, that's good to hear. We're really glad to have you in our team right now.
I'm glad to be here.
And we have a special preview of an audio doc from the Ryersonian Arts and Life director, Camille Coppin. She went out on a mission to find out more about the history of Black Canadians missing from Canadian school books.
Melissa and Anthony spoke to Camille on the subject a couple weeks ago, and now we're excited to share part of her project on our podcast.
I grew up in a small town called Newmarket in York Region. Within the town, there were about three Black families that I knew well. One of those were my relatives. Needless to say, the Black community I came to know was very small. In school, faces in textbooks didn't look like me, but they looked like all the other faces I would see around me. So I thought maybe my people missed the deadline to submit pages. My parents, raised in Guyana and England respectively, would teach me all they knew about their history and where we came from, the soil in which they planted their seeds to create the life that they wanted for me. When I was about 16, my mom told me that she thought her and my father's marriage didn't work out because the first year of marriage, they spent apart. My father had been in New York and my mother in Toronto. Having come from Guyana, it was more difficult for him to migrate into Canada than my mother, who came from England. Although I accepted it, lived through the dramas of seeing a marriage falling apart, and every other difficulty, I could never understand why my father wasn't able to come to Toronto for so long. I'm now 21. I've grown up, moved out, and started to plant the seeds of my own life. The hard part is, I'm not just Guyanese or British, I'm also Canadian, and my soil is different, and it holds a different history. But how can I effectively create the life that I want for myself and my own future children when I don't know my own Canadian Black history? I knew that Black people had been in Canada for hundreds of years, so how are we not represented in teachings of history? I set out to find the history I didn't learn in textbooks, from what my parents told me or from what was omitted in classes during my time here at Ryerson. I guess it really is true that Google has everything. Because with one quick search, I found Caribbean-Canadian human rights activist Donald Willard Moore. A link opened a webpage to an online exhibition of Moore's life and times that's hosted by the Toronto Archives. Although decades apart, I learned that his migration story mirrored that of my grandparents, who left Guyana for a better life in Britain. What impacted me the most were his efforts to reform immigration laws that years later also impacted the migration of my own parents. Born in 1891 in Barbados, Moore lived there until he emigrated at the age of 21, leaving his family for New York. Moore left for Montreal soon after, as he found work with the Canadian Pacific Railway and never looked back. His life illuminated the city for Caribbean immigrants. Years later, he purchased Occidental Cleaners and Dryers, where he had worked for years. It is located at 318 Spadina. Moore transformed the location into a center for the Caribbean community. As a dedicated member of society, Moore struggled with Canada's racist immigration laws. While they did not blatantly ban the immigration of Black people, the path to citizenship was laden with as many loopholes and booby traps the Canadian government could muster in order to turn people of color away on technicalities. At the height of it all, the Canadian government hired African-American agents to spread anti-Canada propaganda to deter migration and denied equal immigration status to Black citizens who did come over. I contacted Rosemary Sadler, the former president of the Ontario Black History Society, to break down this part of Canadian history that I was never taught.
So there were already people of African origin in this part of the world, in this place we now call Canada, from at least the 1400s, if not before. In the 1400s, they were Coureur de Bois. We have the first named African, not the first African, the first named African in Canada, being Matthew da Costa in 1604. We're also talking about a country that is built on a history of enslavement of Africans. And the first named African slave was Olivier Le Jeune, who arrived or was mentioned approximately 1628. So by the 1900s, there were other things that had already happened. So our history doesn't start in the 1900s, and in fact, Canada was barely Canada, and it had only been Canada since 1867.
Rosemary told me that at this time, Canada was desperate to find people to populate and cultivate Canada's vast land. However, although Canada opened its doors to the masses, there was still a catch for people of color.
But there was an effort. The country was big, massive, and in particular in the prairies, they were looking for people to come in and populate this country and help build it up. And it was magical because when they realized that African Americans were among those people lining up to be considered for admission, there were laws that suddenly came into effect, orders in council to prevent Black people from Oklahoma from entering this country. And it wasn't because it wasn't said outrightly because they were Black. It was said that they were deemed unsuitable for the climate and the requirements of Canada.
Any Black person who wanted to enter the country, regardless of the money and trade skills they possessed, had to jump through hoops. Blacks were subjected to extensive medical examinations at the border as a way to deter migration. It is even documented that in 1911, medical authorities were receiving money for every potential Black immigrant that they turned away. Throughout the phone call, I continued to ask myself, was this possible? I felt naive. Canada, the country of many faces, was turning away my people, who only desired a better life, who desired to make contributions and plant their seeds to grow a life were being denied based on technicalities of their physique.
That was Locating My History, a doc project from our arts and life editor, Camille Coppin.
Camille's full story is now available via the Ryersonian as an online article on our website, ryersonian.ca. The full doc is also available today as a separate episode of our podcast. You can download it on Apple Podcasts and give it a listen, which you should do because it is fantastic. After listening to it, I really liked what Camille had to say about this idea that this history is so obscure to Canadians, and just this idea that, you know, we have to go and actively seek it out and find it because of the fact that it's not taught to us a lot of the times. There's often, people say, you know, a sort of single narrative of Canada that is told to us, and that everything else is kind of pushed to the wayside or really hidden, really deliberately hidden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just go about our lives like thinking that everything's good, everything's fine, but there's always that part of the past behind us that we're trying to hide. But I think Camille did a really good job piecing together the story and putting her own personal perspective on the history of Black Canada. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really had fun working with Camille on this piece, and I listened to it before too, and yeah, I couldn't stop listening to it. I think I've listened to it probably like 10 times already, to be honest.
This is part of the doc that was not in the preview we just shared with you, but when you listen to the full audio doc, you'll get to hear it. But she went down to the archives in Toronto to find out more information about Donald Willard Moore, and that part was really great to me. I don't want to spoil it, but what she finds and how she finds it and just how shocking I think it must have been to see what was written in the information that she found, just how blatantly racist it is and just how it's something that we, you and I, and a lot of us don't know.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, make sure to subscribe to The Ryersonian This Week on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We have new episodes available every week on Fridays. Fast forward to today, the Black Canadian community here in Canada has come a long way in building better lives. But there are still systemic barriers that prevent Black youth in receiving equal access and opportunities, especially in the business sector. I set out to find out more about this issue in this next story. Toronto's startup scene is booming, and Ryerson is at the forefront of all that energy, with the DMC being named the top university-based business incubator in the world in 2018. Despite this achievement, rarely would we hear of success stories from marginalized communities in Canada's tech and business sector.
We knew from our personal experience that there is Black excellence all around us, ordinary people doing extraordinary things with their lives, and we wanted to ensure that those stories were covered, so we created a platform where we could promote positivity from our community.
That was Camille Dundas, the founder and editor-in-chief of BuyBlacks.com, a web magazine that focuses on Black Canadian culture and community. Together with her husband, Roger, she showcases stories from Black Canadians involved in diverse fields. Not surprisingly, their path to entrepreneurship wasn't easy. At every point in their journey, they faced difficulties accessing the resources they needed.
We approached some government agencies about getting small business sponsorship or grants. One of the guys told me that the idea wouldn't work because Black people don't support each other, so they weren't going to support us. 6 years later, we're here to say that they were wrong, right? Totally wrong.
Roger says this perception comes mainly from outside the community, and that there's a bias towards Black youth that is preventing them from becoming as successful as they can be.
I think that people don't think it's a big deal. And a lot of people, actually both from in the community, outside of the community, feel, you know, you just work hard enough, you have a good idea, you know, everything's going to be okay, you're going to rise to the top.
For women of color, these challenges can be magnified.
My name is Elsie Amoko, and I'm the founder and CEO of Mommy Monitor.
Amoko founded the startup Mommy Monitor as a platform for women of African, Caribbean, and Latin American descent to have access to culturally sensitive prenatal care.
Being in those spaces as the only Black person and a Black woman at the same time, sometimes one of the few, very few women there, I think a lot of the time, I wouldn't say I'm ignored, but I'm not taken as seriously. I think that it's more of a situation where they're looking for people they think that they can trust and make money from and capitalize off of. And unfortunately, I think to most of the space, that does not mean a Black woman or a Black person.
According to an article by Forbes magazine published last January, 33% of women of color experience racial bias in the startup world. Ryerson, the Black Innovation Fellowship aims to break these barriers to provide resources and mentorship for aspiring entrepreneurs. Osman Hamid works as a program manager for this initiative.
Different diversity reports related to incubators and the incubator ecosystem will show you it's not been a fair representation for people who identify themselves as Black entrepreneurs within these spaces. Specifically within the target market that we're looking at, especially in Ontario and the GTA, we don't have a lot of folks represented from the Black community in these spaces, and I think this fellowship will be able to help us bridge that gap.
The initiative was founded last December by property developer Isaac Olowolafi Jr. and has given $200,000 so far to fund the program.
Business professionals within the Black community are there. They're making big things happen. You should only just look at the person who's funding this endeavor. He built a development company. He's a young guy in his 30s. He built the company from when he was in his early 20s. And, you know, he's an immigrant from Nigeria. He came here when he was 4. He's now built a big endeavor within the real estate development industry.
Hamid says that through the Black Innovation Fellowship, they will also be able to identify issues that affect marginalized communities within the tech sector.
I think the focus should be on how can we empower young people and how can we do this through the fellowship and bring in more stakeholders and people within the ecosystem so that at least we can raise the issue, raise the awareness, and raise exposure of any gaps that might exist due to the fact of the lack of participation from the Black community.
Hamid sees a lot of potential in the growing Black business community here in Toronto.
I believe it's vibrant. I believe that it's diverse. I believe that, you know, when you say the word Black, it could mean multiple things as people identify with it.
For people like Amoko, programs like these are a step forward in giving back to marginalized communities. They also help inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs.
In the tech space, we see some movement, still nothing extraordinary, not at the level that I think we need, but I have hope that hopefully this year we'll see a lot, because there's a lot of people who have been growing for the past year or two who are doing quite well, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen for them within the next year.
As for what this means for Hamid, this is what he had to say.
For me, being part of the Ryerson community for almost 10 years, I can, you know, proudly say that I'm not surprised that we're the front runners when it comes to this, being able to promote diversity and empowering people through different ways, including entrepreneurship and innovation. And I'm just proud to be a Ryersonian, proud to be someone who's part of this program and the innovation ecosystem we've created, and proud to be Black.
I was very surprised to learn that this is, at the very least, one of the first, if not the first, programs of this kind in Canada. Can you actually talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So they basically just announced the program last December. And now they're in the process of just getting the word out, trying to get people to sign up for the program, have some companies pitch in their ideas, and basically also get create a network of mentors, mostly Black entrepreneurs as well, people in really diverse fields. Like there's this one company that's in the program. They're making a cannabis vaporizer and some other companies. But yeah, it's a really interesting program. And I feel like that it would really help Black youth to really put themselves out there and get their foot in the door.
Mm-hmm. Do we know when it's going to launch?
It's slated to launch early this spring. We'll definitely see a lot more developments coming in the next few weeks regarding this initiative. Now for a different perspective on the last story, we have a guest with us today for our segment, What's Up Ryerson?
We sit down to chat with different people from the university and learn more about the work they're up to on campus and in the city. This week, our guest is Mike Regis. Mike is a recent Ryerson grad and working as a film director, writer, and editor. He graduated last year from the business management program. Right now, he's interning at a film production company in Toronto and plans to launch his own very soon. He joins me in the studio now. Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
So you're a business graduate, but you're working as a filmmaker, among other things. Can you explain to our listeners what the connection is between the two fields for you?
So I'm going to keep it super real with you. When it came to a post-secondary education, I think, especially at a young age, I knew I had an aspiration to get into filmmaking, but I was worried that it wasn't going to be the right thing for me, especially after the 4 years. So I took the safe route and chose business school, but I followed my passion, and I was fortunate enough to get into an intensive filmmaking program called POV Third Street.
Well, that seems fair enough that you'd try to go about your dream in what you would think is a more practical way. But it's interesting to me, you still have a bit of that creative spirit. On your online platforms, you refer to yourself as a storyteller, for example. I'm curious, what kind of stories are you most interested in telling in your work?
I think as I'm starting to grow into my career, I think I'm very, very interested in stories of underrepresented individuals like myself. I feel like we present a very unique life experience, and that's something I really want to explore.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your goals for yourself that you've set for yourself in your career?
I would love to make feature films, but most importantly, and that's part of the business, is like just to help other people that are creative and like me, because statistically speaking, representation in the industry isn't the highest. You know how it is. So that's one of my main goals. And, you know, we're even doing it right now. And it makes me happy because to have friends that are from certain environments that might not get a shot, it's cool that, you know, they can come work with us and get their first shot.
Tell me a little bit about this film production company you're hoping to launch, Outsider Genre.
So that's going to be with myself and my business partner and one of my best friends, Diego Soto Rivero, who I met at Ryerson. So you never know. You always meet your amazing longtime collaborators. And yeah, that's a goal that I always had in mind. And, you know, where we just looked at the industry and I was thinking to myself, I was like, I really want to own something. But most importantly, I really want to do it on our own. Because when you're a person in power, so to say, you can really be in charge of decision making and impact, you know? So that's something that we really, really wanted to do, and we're super excited about it.
What's some work that you've done so far? Maybe not with the Outsider Genre because it hasn't launched yet, but just in general that you feel like speaks to kind of your goal or what you want to do. Like you're like, this is what, you know, Mike Regis, what my work is all about.
So it would have to be my first film that I did through POV called Worst Student Ever. It's about, do you know Randella J? Rise?
No, tell me about it.
So he started a big movement in Scarborough, in which he provides people safe spaces to express themselves. And the movie was on him and his journey in relation to school and what he had to go through. And you really, really understood his trials and tribulations.
So we just heard the story from Anthony about the Black Innovation Fellowship being launched at Ryerson. So their goal is to help Black entrepreneurs in Canada turn their ideas into viable businesses and enterprises. As a Black entrepreneur yourself, do you feel there are barriers that you personally face to success because of who you are?
Well, yes. That's the shortest way. Mm-hmm. I can do it. But my mentality and even the way I was brought up was that, you know, it's like instead of saying, you can't, it's like, why not? So in my mind, I always persisted, I always went through, but I feel like there definitely are barriers. And I'm happy that Ryerson University is getting behind this and doing an initiative. And that just shows that they care. And as a Black man, it's hard, man, to just keep it real with you in certain situations. And it's very assumption based. It's like, oh, I didn't get this. Was it because of this? You know, was it because of my skin color, or was it because I wasn't good enough? And even growing up, you're told, like, you got to work three times as hard. You know, you have to be grateful to be in the room. So they're definitely, I definitely feel like they're barriers. But I'm also happy we live in the 21st century where there's the internet, there's Instagram. If you really want, did something crazy dope, you can put it on YouTube and have a direct audience.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for anyone like yourself who might be in your shoes or in a similar place?
Truth be told, I understand the perspective of I'm black and it's hard, but you have to really ignore that, because if you see a person of color doing it, or any type of minority, like women, anybody doing it, therefore it's showing you it's possible. And you have to really, really, really go after it. But most importantly, you have to know why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing it for recognition or clout, as they say, or certain vanity type things, when it gets hard, you're gonna quit. But if you're passionate about it, you know you're doing it for a bigger purpose, it'll take you through the hard times.
Well, that's solid advice, Mike. It was great to hear about everything you're up to. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week.
And that's it for another episode of Ryersonian This Week.
If you have a question or comment about today's show, send us an email at sonian@ryerson.ca. That's sonian@ryerson.ca. Or you can reach out to us on social media @TheRyersonian.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, Ryerson.
We'll be back next week.